Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 440 for comics originally released on January 13th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Green Lantern Corps Edge of Oblivion number 1 of 6. Did you read, Drew, the Green Lantern The Lost Army series?
No.
Okay. Despite this being a number 1, this is essentially Green Lantern The Lost Army number 7. But it looks like this secondary Green Lantern series has kind of been demoted to a series of mini-series. So they've got, I guess, an easy out, maybe, if things aren't going too good. Because this, again, is expected to be 1 of 6, whereas they didn't say that up front on Lost Army. So I knew the situation on this coming in. Since you hadn't read that mini-series, how accessible was this for you?
You know, it wasn't bad. I mean, I was just following Tom Taylor to whatever his next project was.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't realize any of that you just mentioned. So, it wasn't bad though. I mean, it didn't feel like it was in the middle of a story. It just, well, it kind of did, but I mean, it didn't feel like I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was helpful. But yeah, you kind of were thrust into something that already occurred. And I just figured it had something that happened in Green Lantern proper or something. And this was just like an offshoot of that. So that's cool that it's a series of miniseries. That, but I really thought it was okay. It wasn't bad, accessibility wise.
Well, I think they did a surprisingly good job in accessibility, but to a degree that's almost a condemnation of that previous miniseries, or de facto miniseries, because it was, I thought, launched as an ongoing, in so much as what happened in The Lost Army doesn't really seem to be that big of a deal, because obviously you skipped it and seemed to figure out what's going on fine. They open with a, hey, this happened. My reading of this was kind of colored by the fact that the whole Green Lantern Corps lost in time and space thing, I've already had 6 months of that. And I'm frankly kind of ready for that storyline to be over and for them to, I don't know, go be Green Lanterns in the current universe, not this previous one to where we are now. So there's a little bit of just get on with it for me. I'm assuming you didn't have that because it was kind of a new status quo as far as you were concerned.
Yeah, I didn't have that. I was just kind of trying to decipher who was who. And mm-hmm. There was a laundry list of core members that I, you know, don't see enough of to be familiar with. So just trying to grasp my mind around that, and basically, is this a Guy Gardner book for me? That's what this felt like. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the previous one was very heavy with John Stewart, but Guy Gardner certainly got a lot of screen time here. Simon Baz actually makes an appearance. He was the one that was a member of the Justice League for about 2 seconds. What I find entertaining here is even though they're lost in time and space, he's still wearing a mask for, frankly, no good reason other than to differentiate him from John Stewart, which I suppose narratively is not a bad reason. You know, they set up the status quo of what's going on here and then just out of nowhere introduce two new characters, Dismas and Azras or something like that, who kind of seemed to be presented as if they were like the guardians of the universe for this previous incarnation of the universe. And introducing them, introducing this other character who's in this city, who comments on just how formidable these Green Lanterns are. Somebody comments on that to him, and he's like, yeah, I'm not worried. All of that just seems to be something to prolong this whole Green Lanterns lost in space bit, at least for the duration of this 6-issue arc. And, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, I was ready for this to be kind of over and for them to be back where they need to be and stuff like that. The story Tom Taylor is telling is not bad, but it goes in line with a lot of moves at DC over recent years where it's almost like the problem with the characters is they are who they are. And Green Lanterns are kind of the space police. So let's not have them be in their space or as police. That'll fix everything. And I'm like, I don't think so. this did have some good moments here and there. I really liked Muck there at the end, which, you know, is a bit of a shame. I really don't expect him to get heavily featured in future issues.
Is that the carp?
The fish one, yeah.
The fish Green Lantern? Has he been around?
First time I recall seeing him.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and it's funny because a lot of these, even though we've been following some of these lanterns for a bit, they all either blur into the background or just don't seem all that familiar to me.
Is a Squirrel Green Lantern significant? Does he have a history?
Oh, he's been around a long time, actually. Badge has been around since at least the 80s. I think he was introduced in the Tales of the Green Lantern Corps backup feature. And then when Green Lantern changed to Green Lantern Corps at issue 201 around the time of Crisis on Infinite Earths, he, Salak, Kilowog, and a couple others were a bunch of Earth-based Green Lanterns at that point.
Yeah, I liked him and Guy and their chemistry a lot. Mm-hmm. Their back and forth was great. I think that should have been the book. I would like to see a little buddy cop story between those two, and you know, it's kind of got a little Rocket Raccoon feel, I guess, to it, and that same kind of sensibility. Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun, and I think it was a little crowded, right? It feel crowded to you?
It did, but your mention of the buddy cop thing reminds me of just how interesting the Thor's book was during Secret Wars over at Marvel. And how Green Lantern Corps very easily could be that kind of a buddy cop thing. And we get none of that here. And we rarely, if ever, get any of that in the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, just kind of team up a couple of them, a smaller group, and then hang out with those guys for a little while. I think that's a good idea.
And treat it more like a standard police procedural, but in space. I mean, we know that kind of a thing can work. They just, that's not what they're doing here. If anything, this harkens back to almost like a Battlestar Galactica or Star Trek Voyager of, you know, getting home being the main goal.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a little crowded. There was some good stuff in it. I thought the art was really, really strong and a really well drawn book. And I really liked the relationship between, I'm just going to call him Squirrel Green Lantern Guy. You said his name is Badge?
Yeah.
Badge, yeah, I thought that was great. And there were a couple other moments, you know, Mogo? Who's the planet?
Mogo is the planet.
The Mogo stuff was pretty interesting and felt some real danger there during that sequence. And so there's some good stuff in this, but yeah, all in all, it did feel just a little crowded and not a lot to get behind for where this is going to be for the next five issues.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the fact that we've got another five issues of this at least didn't win it any points in my book. Again, it's good. Tom Taylor's a good writer. Ethan Van Sciver's doing a great job on the art, like you said. But they're prolonging a story that I don't feel needs to be prolonged. For me, this was a B-. It's good. It's got its moments. It's got some definite potential. But it also feels like Tom Taylor's kind of picking up the pieces of, well, this is where the story is and where he's got to take it. I would like to think if he had free rein, which I'm imagining he doesn't, but I could be wildly mistaken on that, that he would have gone in a different direction and it would frankly be more interesting.
Yeah, I'm just a hair below you at a C+. And yeah, there's some good stuff in here and I'll probably read the next one, but I don't know if I'm going to do all six unless it kind of narrows its focus a little bit in the next issue. If it continues to stay this high forest view of the story, then I'm probably not going to stick around because it gets a little boring for me.
No, I can understand that. I'm curious if there's going to be a series after this or if they just kind of ratchet Green Lantern back down to a single title. You know, I mean, granted, they've got Sinestro, they've got a few other things kind of in the space area. I don't see the need to necessarily keep two titles going.
Well, I wonder if this is this is just a new business model for them. And, you know, they've got core ongoings and then they've got what used to be secondary tier ongoings. And maybe they're going to try these as a series of miniseries to keep the sales numbers up a little longer.
If they've got to revert to a series of miniseries to get the bump from the number one issues, that, as I've talked about on many, many, many episodes, usually doesn't last very long. That's just hiding a weakness in the title, the property, the execution, something. Why not fix that problem versus just change how you package it?
Because it's hard to do that, and they don't have the horses to do that.
Well, it's absolutely hard to do it, but the benefit is there if they do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what we think should happen across the board.
Fair point. It's easy for me to say, hey, just make it better. It's hard for them to do that. I'll concede that point.
But yeah, they should be focusing on trying to develop those. But I can understand, in the short term, well, Marvel's getting a lot of juice out of this over here. So let's see what we can do with some of our second tier titles. Can we actually do better numbers wise than we were able to do with a Green Lantern Corps title? I can't remember what it ended at, but I'm pretty sure it was below 30 grand a month in sales. So I guess we'll have to see how this shakes out, and if it's a net gain or it's a wash.
Well, this first issue will probably do better than the last Army number 6 did. But the question is, how quickly does it fall right back in line? And we'll find out in the coming months, certainly. But I would hope DC's not explicitly taking a page out of Marvel's playbook with hey, they're relaunching all the time, revoluming, let's see if that works for us. But they probably are.
Right, and I don't think they would do that right away, at least, with some of their core titles that are healthy, sales-wise. But that's really just a dozen titles or so, isn't it?
True, but I would have a different view on this if the previous Green Lantern Corps miniseries had focused on one group and this was focusing on a different group.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, okay, they're different stories. That's fine.
Well, we reviewed the volume before that, just the standard Green Lantern Corps title.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember. What did it do? What was its focus?
I would have to pull up the numbers. If you give me just a sec, I will do that. I didn't have them up.
Not numbers-wise. Oh. I mean, what was the story focus? Do you remember that? Probably not two volumes ago.
Not two volumes ago.
Yeah.
I've literally read thousands of comics since then.
I'm thinking it made it to high 20s, low 30s in its issue numbers.
It sounds about right.
And so it would have been through 3 years of New 52 launch. Was it? It was a launch title, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it is kind of sad to see it relegated to a couple of series of miniseries, but I do get it. I do get what they're trying to do.
I get the necessity of it, but I don't like the necessity of it.
Mm-mm.
And I feel like they are trying to almost do a fast one on us or something. You know, it's like, you think we're not going to notice that this is, you know, a rotating set of titles here. The previous one actually went to issue 40 for Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, okay.
And then they did The Lost Army after Convergence, skipped a month, and then this came in.
So we haven't been without a Green Lantern Corps title for that long.
No.
Just during Convergence, really.
Yeah. So it's rotate titles in. It's the shell game. It's the churn-based model. Certain ones, titles just go away and get replaced by other ones. Sometimes similar properties, sometimes new ones. So we'll see if this works. I don't take it as a given at this point. This will have a replacement title as a Green Lantern Corps, but obviously if it goes away, something else will fill in a slot. But I think anyone coming in new who didn't read The Lost Army is going to feel a little disconnected by this. In other words, yeah, I get it, but who cares? And I don't think it's strong enough to win fans on its own, and therefore I don't see why it would spawn off another volume or another miniseries after this necessarily. It might.
I think this model would work for them if they were fresh stories and fresh story arcs and not having known that, you know, they were continuing the previous story arc. I can see where you're a little more perturbed by this because, yeah, if you want to tell a series of Green Lantern Corps story, make them at least different and standalone and not just a continuation.
I don't know if perturbed's the right word. The one I would use is jaded. I just think it's apropos. And again, this isn't a bad comic. It just, they're not telling the kind of story I want them to tell with these characters. They're doing what I think is a blatant revoluming just to get a number one, not telling a new story. It really picks up on the heels of the past miniseries. Those are the things that are rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, now I'm ready.
Okay, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Secret Wars number 9 of 8, or of 9 now, I guess. It's written by Jonathan Hickman. We've got Esad Ribic on the art. And I'm just going to say up front, we may end up spoiling a few other comics from Marvel in this review.
If they would have.
On the upside, I think all of them came out about a month or two back.
Yeah, yeah. That was the thing that stuck with me the most from this, which is probably not the right thing to stick with you, is, man, this ending was great and would have been awesome if I hadn't already known all about that in Iron Man. So it really was less effective.
The fact this came out late undercut what was otherwise a decent ending for the event.
Yeah.
On just so many levels. On the first page, I think it was, where Doom is offering to bring back Atlantis for Namor. You know, I'm like, you know, hey, that wouldn't last. I mean, I've read Squadron Supreme number one. And there were enough things about the end where they set up, you know, Alpha Flight, the Miles Morales Spider-Man, a few things that we've just seen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay. To me, though, the part that I felt was probably the weakest link in the story was right around the middle. We've got the big climatic fight scene, and it basically ends with a moment I just don't buy. And again, we're going to get a little spoilery here, but Reed and Richards and Dr. Doom are fighting for everything. I mean, everything that is, was, could be, everything imaginable. And basically, it comes down to Reed and Doom basically Reed saying, you know, it was Doom who said, you think you could have done this all better, been God better than I could have been.
Yeah.
And Reed's like, well, yeah, and we both know it. And Doom basically agrees. Now, first off, Doom would never admit that. His ego would not allow it. Certainly, even if that's not the case, which I think it is, having, again, read Dr. Doom for decades now, he never would say so out loud. And absolutely not in any possible reality other than this page of comic would he do it to Reed's face. So at this point, I'm like, this central moment of the comic didn't ring true to me based on these characters. And then, you know, it's like the whole story builds up to this moment, and that's the turning point. So, you know, I'm willing to cut it a little bit of slack that, you know, yeah, I don't buy it, but, well, you know, it happened. But then the rest of it is, again, setting up stuff that we've already seen played out.
Would have been very effective 3 to 4 months ago. These were nice little vignettes, nice little reveals to springboard into the new number ones.
Mm-hmm.
And really would have been effective. And it would have made you excited about those. But just having time has passed. We've seen a lot of these reveals already. That really hurt it and set it back a little.
Absolutely. And I don't know that I would have had no problems with the issue had it come out back then. I think I still would have had the problem with that one moment. But certainly the stuff afterwards where they're setting things up, that would have played better because it would have been set up. It would have been a reveal. It would have been new, like you said. So the delay certainly, I think, hurt this issue because of how much we knew having read 2, 3, 4 issues of a lot of the titles that's spin out after this.
Yeah.
They did answer a number of questions or whatnot, number of things about the status quo of the Fantastic Four. And while I thought that was cool, interesting, very Hickman in terms of just what he's done with the Fantastic Four over the years, it also really echoed for me the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And it's not identical, but there are some very, very strong parallels. Both in terms of the overall story of Crisis on Infinite Earths and this version of Secret Wars, and certainly in the ending here. Again, there's some definite differences, but it had a parallel enough structure that it made this feel, I don't want to say derivative, but very much like a mashup between the original Secret Wars and Crisis on Infinite Earths. That having been said, overall, they did a really smooth job executing it. Yeah, there were the delays, and that was a big problem. But it was well told. It was a lot of fun. It held together. And it's almost like Hickman and the other people behind this really took a strong look at what did and didn't work with Crisis on Infinite Earths, with the original Secret Wars. And that was those were the original two event titles. And they melded something that I think worked very well. Certainly not flawless. And again, the big issue here was the delay on this issue. But it was a fun read throughout.
Now, the omnipotent guy that has all the power of the universe that Doom was siphoning.
The Molecule Man, yes.
Yeah. So at the end, he's kind of... So Franklin is using his imagination to invent universes, and they are throwing little pieces of him all in different universes. Are they breaking him up?
Franklin is more than just his imagination. He actually has the power to create reality.
Right, yeah.
This is the whole Heroes Reborn stuff.
Right, he's using that power to create universes all around.
So with Reed Richards' help, they're essentially recreating the multiverse. And yeah, a splinter or a slice of Molecule Man is going to each one just to kind of make it work, make it real, act, I guess they say, as an anchor for it. So basically what you wind up with is one of the quintessential heroes, father figures of the universe, staying behind with his wife in this otherworldly space with, you know, one or two people, one of which is kind of cosmically powered in a multi-universal way. Very similar to how Crisis on Infinite Earths ended with the Earth 2 Superman, kind of the father figure of the DC universe and whatnot, his wife Lois, the Earth 3 Alexander Luthor, who again, kind of multiversally powered in some way, shape, or form. And in that case, you had the Earth Prime Superboy. Here you've got Franklin. You know, both, again, not identical, but strong enough parallels that I at least took notice of it. This is a cool concept for repopulating the multiverse.
Yeah.
It'll last until somebody says, hey, let's just bring Reed and Sue back.
Well, they will have finished their job by then, right?
Or maybe it's just a splinter version of them. Don't know. But sooner or later, they're coming back. And you can't take them off stage forever.
Okay, so... But the actual Doom had wiped everything from existence, right?
Everything was getting wiped from existence because of the incursions. The multiverse was collapsing, and he basically salvaged it by leveraging Molecule Man's powers and stuff, and creating this kind of singular reality.
And so, was that really Sue?
Yeah,
that was really Sue. That was really Reed's wife, Sue. That he was. Basically raping.
I wouldn't have phrased it that way, but you know.
Well, I wasn't thinking that way at the beginning because I didn't think it was going to actually be her. It was going to be another version of her or something. But it's kind of disturbing. He was actually forcing her to be his wife.
He was God in this universe. Yeah, he was bending everything to his whim.
Yeah, pretty.
Doom is typically a villain. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, they don't usually do that kind of stuff in Marvel books, though.
Again, it's probably more subtle in this than it was in the Alias series. Granted, that was a Max title.
That was a Max, yeah.
But yeah, this series certainly has some disturbing overtones throughout it with that kind of stuff. But yeah,
it was a long and winding road. Kudos and hats off to all you trade waiters and Marvel Unlimited subscribers, because you're going to have a blast with this. When you get this title, you'll get it before the first trades from all the new Marvel launches. It'll flow quite nicely. There will be no delays. It'll be a nice meaty story that'll, I think, be very satisfying for you.
I would imagine it would come out in the same order that it came out in print on Marvel Unlimited, just 6 months later.
Oh, I would hope that they would fix it.
I don't know that they will. I don't know.
I mean, it's not like it's hard-coded to do that.
I don't know.
You think they build the delays into Marvel Unlimited?
I think it's basically, we've got this in the queue. Everything that was released, you know, on date X 6 months later automatically gets released on Marvel Unlimited. That's my supposition. but I could be wildly mistaken on that. I don't currently subscribe to that service.
I would hope that there's more than that.
Somebody who subscribes, if they want to check the shipping list that Diamond has on their website and see if it has that kind of lockstep rhythm, I'd love to know.
And I would assume also that the trade and collection hardcover, et cetera, will be out before those first trades of the Marvel relaunches.
We'll find out.
I mean, that would make sense. You'd want those to flow in the right order.
I would think so. But given how quickly some of those other titles are already on issues, you know, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, they're trucking right to a trade, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, Marvel is releasing stuff at a pretty quick clip. So, sure, they could fast track this and get a trade hardcover out pretty soon. But the other stuff's not going to be that far behind, if behind at all.
You know, Izzat Ribic did a fantastic job on that Thor God of Thunder run that he was on. And so I appreciate them giving him this. And he did some amazing stuff in the beginning. But these last couple haven't been anything special art-wise. And so I really think that they could have kept the train on time a little bit, thrown a couple of artists at this to get this thing out, and not lost a lot. Because in my mind, there's really nothing special about the art in these last few that in the series.
But these have been fairly large issues, so it does take a little while to do. And I appreciate how it's got a single artist versus, you know, farming it out to half the bullpen or something. It gives it a more consistent look and feel, visual style.
In theory, I agree with you, except when the stakes are this high. I think at that point, if you have something like a weekly book over at DC, you make sure that book comes out. You throw as many people at it as you can to make sure that it happens. If you have an event book that leads into, half a dozen, 20 other comics, and the stuff that happens is important to those so that those reading experiences are enjoyable for your readers, then you throw artists at this to get it on time and done.
Or conversely, you pick artists that are just crazy prolific.
Yeah.
Who could do it themselves and do it on time and even ahead of schedule, maybe.
Yeah.
There's not many of them, but there are a couple of really good ones out there.
And they don't have the cachet of an Izzat Ribic.
No, but you get a Mark Bagley or something who was doing 18 issues a year of Ultimate Spider-Man at one point. I mean, there are others that are doing more than just a monthly book. Those are the ones you really want to put on this kind of a deal. So you've got the consistent art, and you don't have to have front-loaded the work so far in advance they've got to redraw certain things because the status quo is changing out from under them over the course of a year, year and a half that it takes to do some of this.
I'd be curious how many of these they had in the can before issue one came out.
I would be too. I do know in some of the other event books over at Marvel that periodically, like Bleeding Cool or wherever, would show what the original art page looked like before they realized, whoops, we've got to redraw so-and-so because, well, they're not around anymore, or this story changed this character's look, or, you know, what have you.
That's fun.
So keeping it up with a ever-changing shared universe is a challenge.
That's what you get when you'd want to do a line-wide event. You get that baggage. You got to deal with it.
Absolutely. That's part and parcel of it. And yeah. I think for a line-wide event, this came off surprisingly well as far as just the miniseries itself. I'm not going to say they landed the ending perfectly. I certainly don't think that was the case, but I think it was one of the strongest endings one of their event books has had, as far as I can remember, really, probably since the original Secret Wars.
Yeah, I would say it's the strongest event. I had a lot of high hopes for Spider-Verse, the original Spider-Verse, and it was really great for a while, but it didn't really. Its tentacles didn't go out to that many titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It didn't really stick the landing either. So, and you know, yeah, I can't remember Secret Wars that well, the original. So, but yeah, I thought this was pretty good. I mean, I really think this will read great in a trade.
I think it'll read better in a trade than as the monthly issues, mainly because they didn't come out monthly. A little bit too much of a gap between some of them. For me, again, there was a major story point that just didn't play right for me, and I think this issue was undercut by the delays. I'm going with a B+. I mean, all of that having been said, it was really good. I think if it had come out on time, I would have certainly gotten it up into that probably A- A category, maybe. I just wish they had sold me better on the exchange between Reed and Doom.
Yeah, I gave it a B, straight up B. It was good. It was good. Good, not great. And for whatever reason, it couldn't come out. And so that hurt a little bit. Just took a long time to tell the story. And I kind of wish they would do something where, I mean, I think they have plenty of capital to work with. I kind of wish they would do these as biweeklies and just cram these events in a month or two.
They did that with Avengers versus X-Men or Avengers versus X-Men Axis or one or two of them.
Yeah.
So they have tried that.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get everything to kind of pull together at that point. There's more risks of not so much delays, but again, what's going on with the other titles, fitting it all in, that kind of stuff. So still, it was a fun read.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
This is The Walking Dead, number 150, by a little-known writer of Robert Kirkman, and the penciler is Charlie Allard, who's only been doing this for, 144 issues, maybe?
Something like that.
So really, you know, new creative team on this. I'm kidding. I mean, these guys, they've had one of the longest ongoing collaborations, I think, in comics, and they should be very proud of that. This is 150 issues in. I think it's still going strong. I do think that the storytelling could have been a little clearer. It wasn't until after I'd read the thing and I was actually going back to reread the previously on that I realized the first scene was taking place at a completely different location than the second scene with the settlement and stuff.
Oh yeah, the Dwight stuff.
Dwight stuff versus, you know, what was going on with Rick Grimes and stuff. It's like, oh wait, these are totally different places.
Yeah.
You know, that was just lost on me at first. And I'll be honest, I was expecting a bit more out of a number 150 than I kind of felt that we got.
Yeah, I'll echo that. I 100 was pretty consequential issue. 50 was really a really strong issue as well. So these milestones come around, you add some pages, you make a big deal, you throw a bunch of variant covers on it and hype it up, and then it's just kind of a lackluster issue. I was very, very disappointed in that.
It
wasn't nothing wrong with it, but it wasn't anything like a 150 should be.
Absolutely. There was nothing. Well, again, they could have been clear with a caption or two at the beginning for me. But there was nothing seriously wrong about this, but I was expecting kind of a defining turning point in the overall story. And really what we kind of got was some stuff, some story beats that needed to be told to get us from kind of where things were to where they seemed to be going. And it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel perfunctory or anything, but it didn't feel like one of the hallmark moments of the run. And there's no particular reason to expect that other than it was a nice round number. And like you said, we got it in 50, we got it in 100. We got it in 75 even.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the color backup or whatever, which I thought was just hilarious.
Yeah, the alien alternative story. That was great.
So I like how it's getting the group from being a bit reactive to a bit more proactive. I think it's a good justification, a good kind of turning point in that respect. But it was a quiet turning point. It was a little bit more of moving the chess pieces on the board and not one of the, wow, everybody has got to read this issue sort of thing. It was good, but it wasn't one of the best of the best.
Yeah, and ever since they went to that all-out war accelerated schedule, and Charlie Adler's kind of stopped doing his inks. He's got somebody else doing his inks. He's got somebody else doing his gray tones now. And I think he kind of handled all those for a while. And there's a noticeable drop-off in quality of the art. It's still good, but you can sometimes tell that it's a team putting this thing out, and I kind of miss that, but I kind of also like having my book out on time and sometimes being able to crank out two or three in 1 month. I like that a lot too. So I'd rather have that than him to do all the pieces of the art himself. And he still takes his time with covers, and still some of the splash pages are all him. But you can tell that he's, It's just not the same as some of his real hallmark issues. But all in all,
honestly, I can't tell. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I would have to go compare like this issue to one of the last ones where he did all of the art himself.
Okay.
And maybe it's just been a slow change or one that I didn't notice as it was originally happening. Because I do notice a few things here, particularly a couple of pages before the end, about 6-7 pages. We've got a scene where everybody is just in a black silhouette. That feels different than what would have gone before. So I think I think I'm seeing what you're pointing out, but I also didn't notice it when I was reading it.
Yeah, it's not enough to take you out of the story. It's just something that I've been noticing, a difference in some of the characters, the way they're drawn, the shapes of their faces are changing a little bit. And I don't think I think his pencils are probably still the same. I just think it's the inker and that's kind of changing it a tad with his application. That I don't think I think Adler did his own for a long time. So I'd have to research it to find that exact number for you, but I could figure that out. Again, this is a good issue of Walking Dead. It's a lot of cool stuff that happens in it, but it's not to the level of an anniversary issue or a special celebration issue or some kind of significant marker in the series history. And, you know, we've got five covers for this bad boy plus a blank sketch cover. It seems, you know, that we talked about this for a while. There's been a lot of hype behind it, and it didn't live up to that. So for me, it's a B+. It's a really good comic. I really enjoy it. It's a $2.99 comic. A lot of value here, but it's not what you would expect out of a $150.
I don't think there's really such a thing as a bad Walking Dead comic. There have been a few I haven't liked, a few that really repulsed me. But I mean, Kirkman knows what he's doing. But for me, this was a B. It was above average, but I was expecting more. I think we've often gotten more. This was what I would consider average for The Walking Dead, which I think is normally a step above almost every other book out there in general. I mean, step above average, certainly. But I was expecting another step or two above that this time. Again, going back to the other anniversary issues or just some of the other, wow, that was amazing. This didn't have me on the edge of my seat. It didn't have me thinking, wow, I just can't wait for that next issue. It was a little bit of a missed opportunity in that respect, but it's still a series that is well worth reading and doing so from the beginning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, coming off the third compendium that came out last month, you know, that'll be that's 48 times 3, whatever that is, 144. Yeah, so you've got a whole bunch of readers that now are in the 140s and could jump in here and pretty easily catch up single issue if you wanted to. And they always usually get a bump after those compendiums, a small bump. And you know, having this built-in anniversary issue coming on the heels of that as well, I think is really cool. And you could have taken advantage of it with maybe something really exciting happening that makes them want to switch from compendiums to single issues.
Well, and I think that was one of the things early on in the title, around the issue numbers 40 to 50 or whatever, things were just happening so much, such of big nature or whatever, the whole Negan storyline and whatnot, that there was a lot of people cutting over from the hardcovers and the trades to the single issues just because they couldn't wait.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a major sign of success.
Well, yeah, Negan was in the 90s. I think his first appearance was actually 100, wasn't it?
Maybe I'm thinking the governor then. Thinking the governor. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
The stuff I was thinking was definitely in the 44 to 46 era.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of great stuff happening back then.
Yeah.
Too. They were a little tighter arcs. And I mean, I enjoy all of these, but sometimes they do. All Out War, I thought, was a little long.
Well, and there are times where Kirkman lets the story play out a little slowly, and I think sometimes you need that. But then there are other times where it's like just one thing after another. And I like how he changes up the pacing a bit. Again, it's going to be the series he's going to be forever known for. And if you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it were to end at, say, 301, if only for him to beat out Cerebus. But it shows no sign of stopping, nor is there any need for it to stop anytime soon. He's just doing a great job.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So what else did you read this week?
I didn't read anything.
Really?
No, I've got a big stack of stuff to do, and haven't read a single comic besides what we reviewed.
I've read a bunch of stuff. I'm trying to think if anything really stuck out in my mind. And no, nothing really seems to be sticking out in my mind. I mean, it's one of those. I've not only read a lot, I've also been doing a lot of other stuff, just editing podcasts and whatnot. So I think that's part of it. Been a busy week or so for me. There are just some good stuff coming out. Marvel, I think, is again, the new Falcon showing up in the Captain America Sam Wilson series. That was a lot of fun. DC, though, I'm still at the point where I know a lot of people were saying this may be a turnaround year for DC, and believe me, I'm hoping for that. Just not seeing it just yet, but it's early in the year. They've got time.
Yeah, I was able to listen to the latest preview spotlight, which was a really solid collection of clips from folks. It was really good, and got me really excited for the 100th coming up. I hope everyone else is also excited about that. I see more and more of the online solicits coming out, and I jokingly threw up on the forum that we should shoot for 100 submissions for the 100th episode. It's getting a little traction on that forum post, but then I thought, oh, I forgot poor John would have to edit all those together.
You know, as long as I know ahead of time it's coming, I can plan for that. If it gets to that Saturday morning and I'm like, oh, we've only got the regular dozen, two dozen, whatever, and suddenly thump, here's another 80. Okay, that would take me a little off guard. I hope that doesn't happen. But I really want people to chime in and just support the series they love. I mean, to me, that's what the preview spotlights are all about, is a lot of these creators put in a lot of hard work on this stuff. Both the writers, certainly the entire art team, because that's just a more laborious task. And I really want to see all those books sell better, whether I like them personally or not. There's an audience for everything out there. And, you know, the more clips we have, the more things get promoted, the better off everybody is.
Yeah. And it just runs the gamut. I mean, some of them are folks just using their iPhone voice recorder and shipping that file off.
Mm-hmm.
At MP3s, and some folks have Audacity or Audition on their computers, and they're, you know, they have their production values pretty high. They're pulling in music, and so it runs the gamut. And I think all are valid submissions. They're all really cool in their own right. Mine tend to be really short, less than a minute usually. And then some folks really have a lot to say about their title, and they go on. And I love the fact that there's different links and different quality types and different. It's just really cool. It's just a really cool smattering of voices because it shows you how diverse the landscape is in comics and how many different titles there are that people are passionate about. So, yeah, I would really share that around on your social media. Maybe when share the forum post or something on how to submit a clip and to any of your comic friends that want to submit something, or anybody who's been around and hasn't submitted for a while, you know, that reach out to them and say, hey, why don't you send one in for the 100th, just to get as many different voices as we can on there and make John stay up real late.
Hey, I'm willing to do it. I'd love for it to be a huge episode and have just a huge turnout. Because, again, it's a lot of work for me. These episodes always are. There's no two ways around that. But, you know, it's... At one point, I did not think those episodes would make it to 100 of them. You know, there have been a couple of times where the submissions just weren't that many that time or whatever. And it's like, well, people are no longer interested. Maybe we no longer do them. But again, we've got a lot of turnout. There's a lot of great comics. And I think with the turnover in titles and just creative teams switching around and all this stuff, there's a huge need for people to recommend to other people what's worth reading.
And I would suggest too that, you know, it doesn't have to be a number one.
No.
And because there's a lot of ongoings that sales are sagging, you know, they're drifting down. If you listen to the Mayo report, you hear some of these titles that critical darlings or things that we've raved about and loved that just nobody's nobody's buying. They're not getting stocked in the stores. They're just not making it onto the shelves. So if it's an issue 21, you know, and it, you know, but it's a comic that you love, you know, give it some love so that it gets maybe one more person to add it to their pre-order list, or a couple more people to add it to their pre-order list. And then that helps. I think that I actually use your show notes again. I use it every month to place my DCBS order because I don't want to miss any of the things. And I always end up adding stuff that I didn't have on there originally.
That is one of the reasons these episodes take a little while to edit. I usually have my order open at the same time. It's, ooh, I better put that down.
Yeah.
But it's all about getting stuff on people's radar. Again, with the year-end episode, a lot of people were mentioning that Scooby-Doo team-up and stuff. It's something that I'd seen through previews, but it just glossed over every time. Now that I've heard it enough times, people are saying, hey, this is worth checking out. I'm going to pay closer attention to it. So yeah, it doesn't need to be the first issue or the first issue of a story arc or even necessarily a great jumping on point. If it's a title you love, just explain why you love it.
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about. And it's a great way to kind of give back and help support the creators that we're getting so much enjoyment out of. I mean, that's, again, the whole reason I do the podcast is to kind of give something back to the community. So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Robin, Son of Batman number 8 from DC, Deadpool number 6 from Marvel, and Usagi Yojimbo number 151 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.